Studio 360.
Mom?
If you recently watched a horror movie, it's all but certain that you encountered a jump scare. That's when a movie startles the audience with some ghastly surprise. A completely predictable surprise. The maniac jumping down from the tree, the zombie appearing in the bathroom mirror, the severed head in the fridge, all accompanied, of course, by a loud noise. You really didn't see nearly as many jump scares before the 1980s. Movies like Carrie and The Omen each only had a single jump scare. Those movies establish a simmering sense of anxiety and terror, moving toward a boil, the idea being that these worlds are scary places and you don't need a maniac springing out of a manhole every 10 minutes to be terrifying. When I go to a movie and come to the sixth or seventh jump scare in 2 hours, I resent it. There's a big new hit horror film that everybody loves, but there is this one big disagreement about it. Does it go overboard on the jump scares?
So I just saw It, and I really liked a lot about It, and I think it's really paving the way for horror films in the future. But if we're going to talk about what I didn't like about It, there's a jump scare once every 5 minutes. And as soon as a horror film establishes a pattern of how the jump scares work, they lose their oomph. My name is Jack Nugent, and I am the creator of Now You See It, a video essay series. I analyze movie tropes, so I'll talk about any topic that kind of seems to come up in multiple places in visual storytelling. So if you go far back enough, you can go as far back as silent film and early German silent expressionism. You know, you would show a monster from far away, and then you'd cut to an extreme close-up. And I think people really understood from the get-go that the rapid changing of an image on screen is a frightening image. That's where it starts, and as sound is introduced, that brings in a whole new wave of what is scary.
Hi, this is Alex Raviello. I wrote about the history of jump scares for Slash Film. There's a scene in The Cat People in 1942. It's a scene where a woman is walking down the secluded street. There's someone behind her. She doesn't know quite where the person is. It's very dark. It gets more and more tense. She's looking over her shoulder. She knows something's there. And it builds up, and then finally, a bus pulls into frame. And it's just like this perfect moment of just tension and then release.
Come on, sister. Are you riding with me or ain't you?
That is basically known as one of the first jump scares of all time. Dr. No directed The Cat People, although Val Lewton usually gets credit.
Val Lewton, the man who thrilled audiences with his unique brand of terror.
He was a famed horror movie producer in the 1940s, and that was his first film. And it's, you know, whenever a cat jumps out of a closet, or, you know, a friend pops up behind someone and it's not actually the real killer.
Oh,
Jesus,
oh.
Will.
I'm sorry.
It became known as the Lewton Bus. It's still known to this day as that. But there weren't too many jump scares in early cinema. There were a handful. One of the most famous is Psycho.
As soon as the startle or the jump scare hits, we've got a whole host of chemicals that are activated and start coursing through the body. My name's Margie Kerr. I'm a sociologist, and I study fear and how the brain and body respond in times of high stress and thrilling situations. We do see the release of our endogenous endocannabinoids, so we've got our own version of THC that is released, along with the endorphins. And that's likely an adaptation evolutionarily, because in these times of stress, it probably meant that we also might be hurt. So our body, you know, learned over time it was a good idea to prepare for any pain and not let that interfere with our survival. But when we know that, you know, there's not actually a ghost that's going to jump through our screen and get us, the endorphins, the dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin can then you know, lend to feeling even a little bit euphoric and feeling excited. And that's where you see the screams turning to laughter. It's just a reframing of these physiological experiences.
But once you start making everything a jump scare, you know, someone's behind you or your friend just scares you. I mean, that's a cheap jump scare because it's not earned.
I'm so sorry. I'm crazy after all. Matt?
If you just do it for no reason, it gives you a chuck and then the audience kind of goes back to normal. But the most effective ones, the ones that we've seen, the ones we always think about, are ones that were built up to. Hello?
People think of jump scare as that 1 second of a crash. But really, it's about how you get to that crash and how you earn the crash.
It's almost like a little film in itself. So it starts with some kind of question, some character leading somewhere.
Anybody here?
There's a long moment in the middle where you're not sure what's going to happen.
And during that time of anticipation, when we look at what the body is doing, a lot of the chemical responses associated to, you know, the fight or flight are already in the works. Your body is gearing up for this anticipated jump.
Hello? Anybody here?
It's been a technique that's constantly been used. I don't think it's ever going to go anywhere because it is so effective. The problem is that, you know, we're so conditioned now to expect jump scares that it's hard to scare audiences. People were trying to subvert that and then do their own turn on it. So there would be a sequence when normally, you know, somebody close a mirror and something would pop up behind them. But something wouldn't happen there. It would happen on the next beat. So they would try to play with that.
There's a really great scene in Jaws where he's looking around the wreckage of the boat and he finds a shark tooth. And that is what you expect to be the climax of the scene. He's about to leave when he notices that there's a severed head. You're not expecting it in any way. You have that false sense of safety. You thought that the tooth was the climax of that scene. Like, you can feel it coming without knowing where it's going to come up. That kind of jump scare requires so much patience and actually very good writing.
More recently, there are movies like The Witch or It Comes at Night that almost have no jump scares whatsoever. And it's because you're expecting jump scares, you're constantly on edge. Because, like, this is a horror movie. It's got to have jump scares in it. And then when it doesn't, we're almost more petrified. Like, something is wrong here. There should be a jump scare. More about this mood, this kind of crippling atmosphere. So I don't know, it's maybe the new jump scare is the anti-jump scare, not having a jump scare.
As light as a feather and as hard as dragon scales.
My favorite jump scare, and it's not even in a horror movie, is in The Lord of the Rings. Frodo has the ring on his neck and Bilbo Baggins,
my own ring.
He kind of lunges out at Frodo. And it's a jump scare where his face gets all scary and he turns evil and really jumps out at him and the music, there's a big crash and everything. That jump scare really is earned. And what it does is it unsettles you for the rest of the movie because you doubt yourself. And whenever you see the ring again, you remember what it could do to somebody.
Yeah, good jump scare has to leave you feeling like it's going to happen any moment. You're never safe.
And as soon as a horror film is going in a way and you don't know when the jump scares are going to be, that's when they become awesome.
Studio 360's Sam Kim produced that story. You can watch Jack Nugent's video essay, Why Jump Scares Suck, on our site at pri.org/studio360. You can also find there a link to Alex Riviello's article on the cinematic history of jump scares.